It's Thursday, 7 p.m., and time for another edition of All About Wine on Blog Talk Radio with your host, Ron, Vice President and General Manager of Florida Estates Winery in Land O'Lakes, Florida.
If you have any questions or anything to talk about, we will be more than happy to talk to you about or search it for you or try to find information for you out there, because there is a lot of information out there about wine.
Call our guest line at any time during the show and talk about wine on air. Dial 646-727-3235. That's area code 646-727-3235.
Basically, what we're trying to do on this program is just trying to educate people and let them know, you know, trying to make wine less confusing and more friendly. You know, we really have had some neat people on the program. I love that.
Holyfield Vineyard and Winery in Basser, Kansas.
Organic Farm on the coast of Maine near Mount Desert Island.
Westport Rivers, Westport, Mass.
HaberHill.com. The Napa Valley of the Midwest.
RainbornWines.com in Santa Rosa. The philosophy for my brand, Rainborn, is to only use dry farm vineyards, hence the name Rainborn.
The best way to reach us here at Ten Spoon in Montana is to go to www.tenspoon.com.
Alba Vineyards.
We're the largest estate vineyard in New Jersey.
Heritage Vineyards and Winery, New Jersey's top-rated winery for 2011.
India Vineyards on Route 93, that's the main highway coming right up the center of New Hampshire out of Massachusetts.
Vibach Winery, we are actually the highest-rated red wines in New Mexico.
Call now and talk about wine on air. Dial 646-727-3235. That's 646-727-3235.
Well, Southwest Wine is actually located in Deming, New Mexico.
Well, La Viña is the oldest winery in New Mexico.
Castello di Borghese, the first winery established in Long Island.
Blackhead Lake Winery, and we're located at Glacier Park in Montana.
Famous Prairie Winery in Moscow, Idaho.
Brotherhood is America's oldest winery since 1839.
Ithaca, New York, College of Agriculture and Life Sciences, grapesandwine.cal.cornell.edu.
The website is freethegrapes.org.
And now, it's the show dedicated to the wine industry.
Come and visit Sheila Larrabee is a winery.
This is Dr. Tom Cottrell. He is with the University of Kentucky Extension in Lexington, Kentucky. He's an enologist there.
I learned winemaking from the then 39 wineries in Napa Valley.
All right. We have Jason with us tonight.
Good evening, Ron. Good evening, Mike, from the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania. Not only am I an attorney, that a good part of my practice focuses on wine regulations and litigation, but I also am the president of a vineyard up here. I started the Hershey-Harrisburg Wine Country.
Again, the website is greenbelt.com. Our phone number is 401-847-3777.
Info at hummingbirdridgewinery.com.
My dad always said I'm a jack of all trades. He said that. I'm just a little guy.
Anyone out there who is interested in this software, you really need to go check out this site. It's www.uncork.biz.
That's really what we're about, and that's, as you said, uncork.biz is where our main site is, and that's where people can read lots about it.
Info at vineyard@hershey.com.
Well, I grew up on the farm here in Lancaster County, Pennsylvania.
We have a website, Walt, W-A-L-T-Z, Vineyard, with an S, don't forget the F.
Paul is a blogger.
It's blog.penlive, P as in Paul, ENNLIVE.com/wine, and that should get you to my wine classroom.
It's wineflower.com, all one word, wineflower.
It's all about wine. Here is your host, Ron.
They're not getting wet.
No, not. Is it raining over there? Because
it did. It's not now. It's sunshining, but it went through. It went through pretty heavy for a while.
Wow. Okay. Yeah, I don't see anything out here on this side of the county. Mm-hmm. But it's all about wine. Welcome to the show. I was tweeting while right at the end of that, I put down that we're live on the air and put our phone number out there, 646-727-3235. If you want to call into the show and talk about wine with Ron, we do not have a guest as of yet. I'm looking down the street now, see if anybody's walking by. You know? if you want to,
hey, you, come here.
You know about wine? What school do you go to? Come on. Here we go.
Now, what's your favorite?
Yes.
8th grade. Okay, that's good.
Probably not this week, but definitely we're looking at next week, and we'll make an announcement at a later date on Facebook, on the website, as soon as the details come up. So what do we have for tonight? We have miscellaneous topics. Anything in particular?
No, not really. I mean, there's always things to talk about wine, so that's never a problem, it seems. But no, nothing particular, just stuff, just information, just things to throw out at you, different things that affect wines and about wine. And so that's what we're going to do.
Good. Okay.
Bunch of different things tonight. So starting out, I saw, a lot of little different topics and a lot of little different things that I see, and I set them off to the side, and I say one of these days when we have a program where we have the time, I'm going to cover these, and it's like a program like this. And I've done this before, so all of you who have listened are familiar with these type of programs and these type of subjects, so it's nothing new to you. And if it's your first time listening, thanks for joining us. Consumers who look at organic, and we've talked about organic wines a lot here. We've talked about how the taste of it, biodynamics and organics and stuff like that. And it's been a topic that we have kicked around a lot over the years, and the pros and cons. And we've talked to organic farmers, and we've talked to biodynamic farmers. And I got a little thing tonight to talk about biodynamic a little bit more too. But last month, April, which is only a couple of days ago, I saw this little thing. Consumers associate organic with absence of negatives. All right. Primarily, it's organic is associated with the growing process. A survey taken over the first couple months of 2013 asked what you think is organic. How do you classify organic? 64% stated that the absence of pesticides would be organic. 60% the absence of herbicides. Now, those are two different things. Pesticides, kills, herbicides, feed, but pesticides kill pets, I'm sorry, and herbicides kill plants and stuff. So it's not spraying, basically. Absence of growth hormones is 59%, so it's right up there at the top also. And this one is something else. The absence of flavors, colors, or preservatives. Now, again, we're getting into the making, and this is not just wines, this is foods and everything else. The absence of colors, you would be amazed. You would be shocked at the number of colorings and flavors and all that is added to the foods that we eat. It is just an amazing amount of extra stuff that brings out flavors and tastes that we enjoy, that we look for in foods and stuff. So, an absence of flavor, color, and preservatives can tend to cause something to be rather bland, if you will, rather tasteless. Absence of antibiotics scored 55%. So we're looking at 56% on absence of flavors, colors, and preservatives, 55% on absence of antibiotics. Absence of genetically modified foods, 54%. The GMOs, that was a big discussion out in California, which it may have been defeated, but it's not dead. We're going to see more and more of that stuff popping up now, more and more of the GMO discussion, more and more of the GMO debate will continue. And, you know, if you start getting very strict about GMOs, a lot of the grapes that I use, basically, are GMOs. A lot of the grapes that are used around the country are GMO, genetically modified organisms, genetically modified foods, because they have changed them so they would be resistant to diseases, so that they would be resistant to cold. So 54% of the people said that that is something to look at. And 48% absence of food irritation. Again, when you look at organic, it's basically the absence of negatives. It's not doing stuff to them. It's letting them be natural all the way through. But I thought that was a rather interesting little survey there. And as applying to wine grapes and stuff, that it's, you know, most of organic really does take place in the field, be it foods or grapes or whatever. Most of it takes place in the field. Some of it, you know, you can continue on. The organic has to continue on into the process. But basically it is in the field. You're leaving out stuff and all that. And believe me, if every farmer out there can get by without using pesticides or herbicides or preservatives or antibiotics or, you know, whatever, they would do it. Because it costs money, and it costs a lot of money to feed all that stuff in there. So it's not something that they fight to keep. If they can eliminate it without losing the crop or without losing their whatever they have, I guarantee you they all would jump on that. So just I found that interesting when I passed it on. A new wine coming out. We've talked about wine, Little Black Dress, a brand of Brown Forman Corporation, introduced a couple of new ones called Devilicious Red and Devilicious White. They're wine blends targeted at millennial women. Obviously, a big, big market now, and I'm going to talk a little bit more about millennials here in a little bit. Delicious Red features Cabernet Sauvignon, Carignan, and Petite Syrah varietals with the small amounts of Zinfandel, Tannat, Mourvèdre, Grenache, and Malbec. Wow, that's a lot of blend. While the Delicious White features Pinot Grigio and Moscato varietals with small amounts of Chardonnay and Sauvignon Blanc. Moscato obviously giving that a little bit of sweetness in there. Showcasing a glittery label, the suggested retail price is going to be right around $11 for each of them. So check them out, Little Black Dress and Delicious Wines. They're going to be on the market. Should be coming out, according to this, you should be seeing them any time now. So something to keep an eye out for. I said I was going to talk about the millennials. I saw something else here that the millennials are a big market, an enormous market for wineries and, well, actually for everything. But I saw this, 5 things to know about millennials. Now, the millennial is the 18 to 30, I think, is what they call the millennial, or 18 to 28 or something. I think it's 18 to 30. I had charts before where it broke down the actual thing, and I don't know. It seemed like a small group. Millennials seemed like a small group because they got the Generation X, Generation Y, and then they got the baby boomers, and the baby boomers go from 46 to 64, which, you know, I mean, it's like, you know, a big spread there, and then they started to break them down and make smaller groups after that. But as the second largest generation next to baby boomers, millennials are an important group for brands to reach. According to a Hartman Group company, which did a survey, the company posted 5 traits to keep in mind when trying to reach millennials. Now, if you're into wines, this is an interesting thing. If you're marketing or whatever, this will apply for everything. Millennials are a big market. Number one, it says millennials are brand agnostic, meaning they do not have a relationship with the brands they buy. You know, it's true. They're influenced greatly by peers and by the internet and by cell phones. That's why the blogs that I've told you about and all that are such a big thing for millennials, because they have access, instant access to all that stuff. Number two, millennials believe technology has had a negative impact on social interaction and communication, and yet you will not find them putting down their phones or their iPads or whatever. So, but it does, and I think every group agrees with that pretty much. Three, typical product category use by millennials does not diverge greatly from other generations. In other words, they learn from their parents and learn from their older siblings and stuff, and they continue to shop based on that. Four, millennials don't want to be advertised to, they want to be advertised with. Again, we go back to electronics. It's an interactive thing, hence the cell phones, the QRC boxes on pages and stuff. You want an interaction, and that's what the millennials are looking for, and it makes a big step when you're doing it with the in different parts and things you're trying to deal with. And five, millennials are not likely, millennials are no more likely than older consumers to consider environmental concerns when shopping. We always think that the millennials are the ones that are going to be changing what we're selling. It's going to make a difference in the how they shop, organic, biodynamic, and all that. But basically, it's been found that there's not a big difference. The older generations are the ones that have taught them, and they continue to follow those patterns. So, I found this a little bit interesting here about the millennials. Everybody's talking about the millennials and how important the millennials are and how it's a good market to sell to. And so there's some things. If you are a millennial out there and you disagree with that, email us. I'll be happy to bring you on the show and talk to you about your attitude and your opinions of based on, you know, what you feel. Email us at that's what she said. All about wine 101 at gmail.com. Or you can go to our website, www.allaboutwinebtr.com, and there's links there too you can always pick up. So either way, if you have comments or something about that, then email me and I'll mention on the air. Another wine here, another new product. Not a new product, something Frontera. You've all seen Frontera out there, I'm sure. If you've been out to the supermarket and you bought yourself wine, or you've been in wine stores, and all of you have, that's why you're listening to this show, because you enjoy wine, so obviously you are wine drinkers. You've seen Frontera. Frontera has been around for a long time. Frontera is expanding their wine portfolio. Playing into the popularity of blends. Frontera is from Concha de Toro, South American, and they're adding three new additions to their Frontera line. Two blends, one Frontera Vintage White, another one Frontera Vintage Red, and a third called Frontera Pinot Noir. And they're all coming from South America, from Chile's Central Valley, to be specific. The Frontera White is described as a contemporary blend of floral Viognier, fruity Riesling, crisp Chenin Blanc, and Melanie Pedro Jimenez. They said the Pedro Jimenez famously used in collectible Amontillado and Oloroso sherries, which is the grape used on that. That's why you don't see it too much, because it really is a sherry grape. Also from the same region, again in Chile, in Central Valley, Frontera Vintage Red is described as a flavorful Shiraz Cabernet Sauvignon Merlot blend that is rich and smooth with a touch of spice. The Pinot Noir is described as fresh and fruity and is from Chile's southern regions. It is vinified and aged in stainless steel. These wines are imported by Excelsior Wines, which most people don't care too much about the importing, but they retail for about $5 per 750 milliliter. So cheap. Well, inexpensive. I haven't had them, so I'm not going to say cheap, but inexpensive. But there you go. Frontier's new one's out. And according to this, and this is dated March, they should be on the market. So check those out. The Frontier new white, red, and blends, and then the Pinot Noir. Something, Corbel Champagne. I don't know if you all have heard this or seen this or not, but Corbel Champagne is the champagne of the presidential inaugurations. Corbel Champagne, really the inaugural bubbly, if you will. On January 21st of this year, following the swearing in of the president, Corbel Russian River Valley Natural Champagne, featuring a commemorative neck label, including the inaugural seal, was served at the inaugural luncheon. This marks the eighth presidential inauguration in which Corbel Champagne Cellars has been named for this prestigious honor, beginning back in 1985 with the inauguration of Ronald Reagan and continuing through the inaugurations of George Bush in 89, Bill Clinton in 93 and 97, George W. Bush in 2001 and 2005, and the first term and this term of the current president, 2009 and 2013. So, Corbel, yay for you. You're doing a good job. And this is something, too, I've heard and I've read and I've seen that the White House and tries to keep domestic wines in as much as they can in those situations and try to use domestic wines, domestic United States, as opposed to shipping something over from anywhere else. So yay, Corbel, yay, White House, and good job. Corbel's on a roll, so I thought y'all might enjoy hearing that. Let me mark this. I always like to mark these so I don't start telling you all these things again, because you can always go back to the archives and listen to anything you want again. I've read this a couple times to you before. I want to go over it again, or not the same one. I've talked about this. These are the growth brands. These are brands that have been growing big over the past year. This comes out of a local trade journal I got. The trade journal is the Beverage Dynamics, the March-April edition, 2013. And they always break down growth brands for everything, actually, not just wine, but they talk about spirits and they talk about beer and all sorts of stuff. But since this show is all about wine, I'm not going to talk about all that other stuff. I'm just going to talk a little bit about what they have to say is the growth brands in wine. Let me read you this couple paragraphs here, what they say about wine in review. Table wine now comprises about 92% of all wine consumed in the United States, and has continued growing in 2012, rising 2.8% in 2012 to reach 295.1 million 9-liter cases. And a quick explanation, 9-liter cases, that is a case of 12 750-milliliter bottles. That's how the industry counts up by 9-liter cases, which is just a basic 750 your basic 750 case, or your six 1.5-liter cases, all 9-liter cases. But once again, domestic brands outperformed imports, gaining 4.3%, while imported table wines declined 2.1% overall. Domestic wines now represent 71.7% of the overall U.S. wine market. And while a majority of the sales volume is comprised of wine selling for under $10 per bottle, the greatest percentage growth is in the higher-end price segment. And industry observers say that as the economy continues to recover, premium and super premium wine sales should pick up, which, you know, great. And we hope all wine sales pick up. Y'all out there, do your part. Champagne and sparkling wine kept pace with 2011's gains, increasing by 3.6% in 2012 to more than 15.8 million 9-liter cases. We've talked about champagne. It's good. Go out and get some. Use it not just for occasions. Use it anytime. I continue on this. This is the 11th straight year of gains for this segment for champagnes and is approaching the high point of sparkling sales of more than 17 million cases regularly seen in the 1980s. So champagne has picked up. It's back on track. It's starting on sparkling wines. It's starting to pick up again. The recent popularity of Prosecco is playing a significant role in this growth. Even smaller in size is the dessert and fortified wine category, which declined another 0.7% in 2012, while vermouth dropped 4.9%. And vermouth is from a grape. It is classified in the wine category. And, you know, it's funny. You don't hear about vermouth too much, but maybe that's why. It's declining, and that could be why. It's a big market. Wine fast track brands. Certain wines are just shooting up. They're just going crazy. The number one this past year is, and it continues to grow year after year, is Barefoot Cellars. We've all seen those out there on the markets. They're everywhere. You can walk into just about any convenience store, any grocery store, any pharmacy, Walgreens. Is Walgreens national? I don't know. Is it? Any just about any store. You can walk into just about any store, and Barefoot has a little shelf space there. Barefoot, by the way, is E.J. Gallo winery, and they've continued to grow by 27% or 20%, 11-12, since 2008. They've grown by 27%. Number two, Cupcake Cellars, or Cupcake Vineyards. That's another one we're seeing everywhere. Black Box is three. Rex Goliath, that's the one with the rooster on it. We've all seen that out there. That is also a big growth one. From 2008 to 2012, it has grown by 50%. Bodo Box, the box wine that we see, that has grown by 55% over the last 5 years. Bogle, 14 Hands, is in next place. Barefoot, Bubbly, Canyon Road, Mark West, Gnarly Head, Kim Crawford, and it goes on and on from there. But the top ones up there, you can understand why those are such big growth ones, because they are everywhere. Wine Rising Stars. This is an interesting little one here. Most Rising Star brands have been on the market for 3 years or less, and they've shown success and even for even newer brands. This year, they have 44 wine brands versus just 43 from last year. That vary in price from value to super premium. There are, let's see, all of these have sold at least 20,000 cases. And again, that's 9-liter cases. Top brands on the list is Apothic from E.J. Gallo. The brand features wines from California, Syrah, Zinfandel, and Merlot, retailing again for below $10. And they had sales of 980,000 9-liter cases this past year. Just a booming amount. There's also Alamos brands imported from Argentina with Malbec under $10. They also had a couple of others from Argentina that they've done. But the Rising Star brands, Apothic, Flip Flop, we're seeing those everywhere now. And in fact, back in 2009, they weren't even on the shelves. They appeared in 2011, 2012, and they've jumped off the shelf since then. Alamos is next. Arbor Mist frozen wine cocktails just came on the market in 2012, and it's already up to fourth place on this. Arbor Mist frozen wine cocktail. I don't remember. Have you ever seen those? Have you? I don't remember seeing those. Obviously, they must be in the frozen sections. Simply is next. La Marca is next. The Dreaming Tree. Ent Wine, E-N-T-W-I-N-E. And that's from Winty Vineyards. And Winty is in Contra Costa County, just east of San Francisco, in that area there, California. Primal Roots, we've seen those. Greenfin, Josh Sellers, 90-plus Sellers, The Naked Grape, Allure Winery, Skinny Girl Wine, Handcraft, Ilunas, Skinny Girl Sangria, Kono, never heard of that, Backhouse, Thorny Bush, Chocolate Rouge, and that's a chocolate wine, just came on the market in 2012, and then it goes down. I'm not going to read all these others here, but quite a list of rising stars and wines that are popping up. The established brands of wine are still holding strong, are still hanging in there, are still doing well. Sutter Home is number one in that. Woodbridge, Mondavi, by Robert Mondavi, Sellers, Constellation Brands, is also hanging on as established growth brands. Chateau St. Michel, Ménage à Trois, Verde Spumante, J. Lore Estates, Sycamore Lane. I don't think I've ever seen that one. Real Sangria. You've all seen the Real Sangria, the Cruz Garcia Real Sangria. And Winty Vineyards is number 10. I bet 10. They don't have these numbered. So let's see. 3, 6, 8, 9. That's number 9. That's all they have there. But established brands are still hanging on there. And the wine comeback brand of the year, they listed as Red Diamond from Chateau St. Michel Estates. They're saying that that has jumped back up there. It is the decline for a couple years. 2011 was down, but it's jumped back up strong. So $10 for the Red Diamond retail price for that. So 2012 wines, growth wines and growth brands and stuff there for you. I saw something interesting, and I'm going to, in fact, that was my stapler. I'm stapling this thing together, so I won't do pieces of it. I saw something interesting. I can't remember, in one of the sites I was thumbing through and looking for and ran across, and it is titled, Where Were the World's First Wine Grapes Grown? And it's just a little short article. Short article. And I went ahead and printed out. I'm going to read this to you here. And it just, I'll read it verbatim without my little editorializing, which I usually do on everything I read. But I'll read this, let you listen to this. It says, Bordeaux, Burgundy, Napa Valley. We know the names of famous wine appellations today, but where was the first wine appellation? Great geneticist, Dr. Jose, and I'm going to destroy his name, Valuilla Mos, V-O-U-I-L-L-A-M-O-Z, and by molecular archaeologist. Wow. How would you like to be a bimacular archaeologist? I said it was going to editorialize. Bimacular archaeologist Dr. Patrick McGovern think they might know where the first vineyard was. Their research published last fall revealed that most of the wine grapes cultivated today come from the southern region of Turkey, and that farmers there grew grapevines to make wine as long ago as 8,000 B.C. and possibly before. Villamos and McGovern discovered the origin of domesticated grapevines by using DNA sequencing, which revealed that the greatest number of matches between the DNA and domestic wine grape varieties and the DNA and wild varieties occurred in southern Turkey. This DNA sequencing also provided insight into surprising family connections between some of our favorite grape varieties. Syrah is the great-grandchild of Pinot Noir. And I'm going to pronounce this wrong. G-O-U-A-I-S. Gouache Blanc, known to make only a natural quaffing wine, is the surprising Casanova of wine grapes, fathering more than 80 other grape varieties, including some popular ones like Chardonnay, Riesling, and Gamay. The wine elite may flock to Bordeaux and Napa Valley today, but Turkey was where it was at in the Stone Age. I just found that really interesting. I just, you know, and if they did the sequencing on these, I would love to see a good chart, a parentage chart of these. They're popping up. You can see these grape charts and all that, but I wonder if it's based on this or, I don't know, on what. Anybody know? Let me know. I'm not sure how the current wine charts are, but if it was all DNA and all that. They're doing more and more DNA sequencing on wine grapes, and so they're finding a lot of stuff out there that's the parentage and all that on grapevines. But Turkey, anyone says, where's grapevines come from? Turkey. The domestic grapevines, not the ones that grow wild, but the domestic grapevines originally from Turkey. Let's see. Oh, here's something I wanted to pass on to. There is a movement on about a labeling wines with nutritional values. We already have the little contained sulfites on there, and you know, we've talked about that in past shows about how the contained sulfites label is blamed for so many things, and people think the sulfites are the cause for all sorts of headaches and maladies that they face when they drink wine. And most of the time it's not the sulfites, and it says so on the bottle, so therefore we name it. But the battle over wine labeling right now, and it's pitting the large producers against the small ones. Now, large producers can put this information onto it. They can have these things checked. They can have these things there. And there was a company at the winery. We hold luncheons. We hold meetings and stuff like that. A few years ago, I guess about 5 years ago, had a group of people come in, and they had a meeting there, and they tasted the wines, and then they, played some reindeer games outside and stuff like that. But then, what was cool about this group was these little information things you find on products, the little nutrition box that you find on products. This is what they did. You would submit something to them, and they would test to get the nutritions and everything, how much fat from trans fat, how many calories, how much sugar, how much carbs, all that stuff. That's what they did. I thought it was really cool. I talked to a couple of them for a while there, and it was just a cool thing, you know, to do that. But that type of information box is being kicked around to put on wine labels. I am pits the large producers against the small. I'm small, and most of the country is. Most of the country is full of small wineries. We have very few real big ones. There's some of them out there that are just enormous and all that. But most of the wineries in this country are small ones. I mean, you look at all the ones we've talked to and all the ones we've talked about and everything. Most of them are little small wineries. And if they are required to put a nutrition label on the thing, you say, well, yeah, okay, we'll just put it in a little box and have the label printed. Well, number one, you're going to have to make room on the box. And usually when the government makes regulations like that, they usually make regulations that it needs to be a certain size. You can't just put it in a little small fine print there. They say, no. It has to be at 10 points or 12 or whatever. They will regulate you. Also, you have to have it tested. Now, the big companies will be able to get themselves what they probably already have, scientists in that do the testing and all that for a lot of the stuff, and they just say, okay, test for these other things. And so it's just part of their job there. Well, we as small wineries don't have our scientists. We don't have the knowledge. We don't have the tools. We don't have the equipment. We don't have the money to sit there and buy all this stuff to do these testing. So we're going to have to send it out. And so it's going to cost us on the wines that we have. Now, the question arises, do we need to have it tested every single batch that we do, every single year, every single one? They do vary a little bit. I mean, obviously, they're all not the same. They do vary a little bit. So if that's the case, are we going to have it tested every one and then change our label every time we do a new batch? These are other questions. Let me read this article to you here, and I'm going to read this article simply because I don't want to misinterpret it. I don't want to paraphrase it because I'm going to get the whole gist of it. Do you need to know how many calories your wine has? On February the 12th, the Federal Trade Commission determined that the Alcohol and Tobacco Tax and Trade Bureau, that's the TTB, and we talked about TTB regulations a couple of weeks ago, should require the flavored malt beverages for loco to indicate the amount of alcohol per serving and the number of servings per container on its packaging. And while this might seem like a minor tweak, it has reignited a debate about what kind of information consumers should see on the back labels of wines and other alcoholic beverages. The day after the Four Loko decision, wine and spirits giant Diego, and Diego is enormous. We've talked about how big they are. They're one of the big ones out there on Gallo Diego, called for an alcohol facts or serving facts label to be printed on all alcoholic beverages. Four consumer advocacy groups recommended the same. Since the early 1970s, groups have battled over whether alcoholic beverages should be subject to the same FDA labeling laws as food. The Diego's petition would make such labels voluntary. The consumer groups, in a letter to Treasury Secretary Jack Lew, go further, calling for a, quote, final regulation to require the following information on all beer, wine, and spirits: serving size, calories per serving, fluid ounces of alcohol per serving, percent alcohol by volume, the definition of a standard drink, number of drinks per container, and the dietary guidelines recommendations on moderate drinking, a maximum of one drink per day for women and two for men. Now, all that information they're asking to put on the label. Okay. It's this language that has some winemakers concerned about cost and time. Most in the Finger Lakes don't have the equipment or can't afford to buy the equipment to test for calorie levels, says Scott Osborne, owner of Fox Run Vineyards. Didn't we talk to Fox Run? Fox Run Vineyards.
I think
we did, yeah. And president of the New York Industry Association. You can't decide what the final blend is going to be until you're getting ready to bottle it. And that can change the calorie count, how much sugar there is. So there's something else to consider. That was the article, okay? And that's something else to consider. You know, when you're blending, and a lot of wineries blend, it's not just, you know, here I've got my product here, I'm going to bottle it in a week, let me send this off and have this analyzed. You're blending up to almost the last minute. You're blending right, you know, and you're getting the final blend before you put it in the bottle. It's, you know, I have a problem. I have a problem with this. I really do. People come in all the time, though, and ask me how much alcohol is in my wine. And, you know, most all my wines are right at 12%. Very, you know, I think, well, the port's up at 19. I actually label it as 19. It's just shy of 19. But most of them are right around 12. Every one of them is right around 12. Most all wines range between 9 and 15% alcohol. That's your standard wine range of alcohol. You know, and so some people want something with a lot of alcohol. Well, they don't have vodka. That's got a lot of alcohol. But most wines are in this one category. To break it down to say, okay, this has 11.32% alcohol. And we can test that. We can test that to that point, and it's easy enough to do. There's ways we can test this stuff. It's a pain, but it can be done. But the TTB only requires us to label our wines within 2 percentage points of what it actually is. So in that case, if it were 12%, according to TTB standards, we can have it as high as 14 or as low as 10 and still be within regulations. This is saying you have to put it on there, the alcohol by volume, 12% or whatever it is. You know, and the next batch is not quite that high. So does that mean you're going to have to change the whole label? You're going to have everything changed over. I mean, I use labels on different bottlings because it's basic information. I don't need to change it. But if we have a nutrition label, if you will, on these, then it's going to have to be changed every time. Proposed label that they're talking, serving facts, serving size 5 fluid ounces or 150 milliliter, which is actually 150, a little bit more than 5 ounces. Servings per container, 5, and a standard bottle of 750 milliliters, 25.4 ounces, by the way. Amount per serving, calories, 120, alcohol by volume, 12, fluid ounces of alcohol, 0.6, and then they get a little asterisk on this sample label here. And you read the little asterisk, and underneath the little asterisk, and it says, a standard drink contains 0.6 fluid ounces of alcohol. The dietary guidelines for Americans recommend a maximum of 1 standard drink per day for women and 2 for men for moderate drinking. You know, I mean, really,
Is there any vitamin A, B, C, any of that stuff also? Because I really need to know when I pick up a bottle what kind of vitamins are in it as well.
Because, you know,
riboflavin, is there – what else?
I'm allergic to niacin. I want to be sure there's none in there. You know, I saw a doctor yesterday about carpal tunnel, and he said, you know, do a lot of B6. So – I'm going to find a wine with a lot of B6. And one glass of wine, we've mentioned this before, and we've talked to different people who've mentioned this. One glass of red wine contains over 350 chemicals, 350 different chemicals. If broken down and taken each one, and they've done it, white wine over 250, close to 300, you know, where do you stop, okay? Do you have a little fold-out piece of paper on the back label that goes out about 3 feet, and you've got to list all this stuff and 0.2 print? And I don't know. Excuse me. I have a problem with it myself. I don't see where it would help. I don't see where it would be any good. Oh, somebody's calling me complaining already. I don't know. I don't see how that would help anything at all, because, you know, most people don't care about that. I tell people 5 ounces is what you should have, and people say at a time, and then we have our next 5. And so people, you know, people aren't concerned about it. And to put that stuff on there, if anything, it's just going to, well, it's going to create more hassle than anything for us. It's just I don't know. So, well, enough of that. I passed it on, and they want to do some Free the Grapes, then they need to look at that also. Health Watch, red wine may help protect against inflammation. A moderate amount of red wine can help with arthritis. It can also help with joint pain and stuff like that. There's a recent study. Alcohol has been shown to help keep you trim, keep the weight down. Reasonably, you know, again, we're talking moderation here, people. Average daily drinker consumes 264 milliliters of alcohol per week, about 9 ounces, which already they've surpassed what's considering the average 5-ounce glass of wine contains 0.6 ounces of pure alcohol, according to the Center for Disease Control, that equals about 15 glasses of wine per week to keep your weight down. So there's another reason to drink more and not listen to the guidelines. And light drinking has also been linked to lower blood pressure. So all sorts of new studies out and all sorts of new things to help us have excuses to drink. Yeah. Last week, we talked to Joy, Joy's Joy of Wine. And if you missed the show, go back and listen to it. It was very informative, very fun, and she had a lot of interesting stuff. We also talked about her other links. If you do listen to her, link on to her, join her, and all that. But this week she came out with a new her new blog, which every Wednesday she comes out with her blog. A couple things on her blog. Joy, if you're listening, I'm going to plagiarize you again here. But at least you're getting the word out there of your blog. This one, eco-friendly bottling, our wine bottles, our wine containers. I can't really say bottles because they're not bottles. Last week's blog, she talked about eco-friendly and how you can, you know, redo your wine and all that. And says there's cases account. Wine cases account for 3.5 billion wine bottles, but only about 30% is ever recycled. So that's not good. That's actually that's very bad. And so if you're a winery out there, let's talk about doing some sort of recycling program that give people a discount if they bring in wines. I mean, if nothing else, you can throw them in the recycling bin instead of a landfill. So some of the newer options that are coming out, instead of wine bottles, and there's one that is a green bottle, and that's www.greenbottle.com. United Kingdom-based company signed a deal in 2012 with independent wine supplier Kingsland Wines to produce the first paper wine bottle. The bottle is paper on the outside and lined inside with a foil pouch, similar to the foil bladder that you find in wine boxes. When emptied, the paper can be recycled or composted, and the liner can be recycled. Cool. And again, you drink wine so fast, it's not going to change the flavor, so don't start squawking about that. The eco-friendly bottle would weigh in at about 1.94 ounces, which is great, compared to a 750 milliliter glass bottle, which weighs almost 18 ounces when empty. So, wow. I mean, you know, can you, at 18 ounces, that's over a pound just for one bottle. So when you get yourself a case of wine that you're shipping, you have almost 13 pounds, actually over 13 pounds. You have over 13 pounds, 13 and a half pounds of weight just in the bottles themselves. if that were down to 1.94 ounces, or if let's call it 2 to round it up, you're at 12 bottles, you're just about a pound and a half of shipping cost. So it's going to help everyone with shipping costs. It's going to help everyone all the way through. What a deal, what a deal, what a deal. I like the concept. And the price is equivalent to that of a glass bottle, so you're not going to be paying a whole lot more for it as far as cost goes. According to the British inventor Martin Myerskoff, I believe it's pronounced Myerskoff, the paper wine bottle is for wine that people will buy and drink, those selling for less than $10 a bottle. The shelf life for the paper wine bottle is between 9 to 12 months. And again, I brought this up before, most all wines in the world are drank within the first 30 days. So you don't have to worry about those going bad. You're going to be drinking them anyway. So I like that. It says, besides the green impact, wine chilled in the paper bottles stay cooler for longer on the table than wine chilled in glass bottles. The glass dissipates the cold a lot faster. UK grocers expressed an interest in the product, and the British public expected to see it on the shelves by last fall. Green bottle did not reply as to why the delay. So, what a cool thing. I like it. Tetra Paks, you have seen those out there. That's another good way to go environmental. The little paper type packs of wine that you can find. Another good way to do it, Tetra Paks are wine cartons you use in the United States, Europe, Canada, Africa, Asia, South America. And they come in all sorts of colors and everything. Also, we have talked about this before. Well, Stack wines. I've been trying to find it. These are the plastic glasses, 187 milliliter stackable glasses that you can get out of Newport Beach, California. DrinkStack is .com is the website if you want to check that out. California has a green approach, totally outside the box or pouch. Their Vinoware stack containers are packaged in a shrink sleeve. The sleeve zips apart to reveal 4 187 milliliter stackers. These are stemless wine glasses. Snap the glasses apart and peel off the foil for a go-anywhere glass of wine. Glasses are made from high-quality plastic, lightweight and shatterproof, giving the look and feel of glass, but actually plastic. Instead of a bottle, or instead of a case of 12 bottles of wine bottles, Stack wines offer 12 stacks packaged in a case. Both the bottle and the individual wine glasses, or the box, I'm sorry, the box and the glasses can be recycled. So, and they're plastic, so you can throw it in your front yard recycle bin. There's a lot of other green packaging out there and stuff like that. I want to talk about that paper model. I think that is really a cool thing. I'd like to see more of that. I'd like to see it. Maybe I can go to that website and ask them to send me one. Think they would? It's in Britain. They probably cost too much to ship across the ocean, but I'll try. So, and I can always go on and on and on, but I won't. We'll stop for the night. I threw out a bunch of information for everyone to digest there, and so we'll stop for the night. And hopefully we'll have ourselves a guest tomorrow, or next week, not tomorrow, but next week. I don't know if we're so flaky about being a guest, because it's always fun and people always have a good time, but hopefully we'll have a guest next week.
Okay. Let me write that down now. 5-9. Okay. Yeah, very cool. And quite a bit of information. We may need to apply a label to the show and tell people how much calories or what they can expect off of the show with all the information. I guess that'll be next. I don't know. If that's affecting us, or it looks like it's just for the beverage. Well, they do that on sodas, don't they now? I mean, don't they put like on Coca-Cola, Pepsi's, and all that, don't they? They put the calories and, you know, the regular FDA stuff, like it's a food item.
Yeah.
But, you know, okay, I got that, but for this, I don't think so.
I just,
It doesn't make sense.
It does. You know, the cost. My mind keeps going back to the cost. I mean, it's not free. You've got to do that. And if they require us to do it, then the cost is yeah, I you know, the regulations, the rules there and all that stuff. Can you just put 12% and leave it at that alcohol level simply because the TTB allows you to a leeway, or will you have to change it every time? Will they tighten up their rules? And hey,
yeah.
I'm going to be battled for years because there's a lot of small wineries out there that don't particularly want to go into doing something like that. And even if the big ones do, the small ones are going to fight it now. So.
Oh, yeah. So you have to attach a little booklet to the back that has all the nutrition information on it. I don't know. Not too good. All right. So we have that's it until May the 9th, right, for the show? And we're going to try and get a guest on, and who knows, you're going to be working on that, I guess, this week. So Ron does a lot of stuff in the off time. So at least as far as the show goes,
people play. I don't understand. I don't
like, yeah. Well, and is it, May is this, not Bud Break. What am I thinking? Is it Bud Break because harvest is in the fall.
Yeah, we had Bud Break. You know, we got little bitty grapes are popping up on. We got this grapevine out in the front walk going into the winery, and there's little bitty grapes popping up. That reminds me too. I'm going to take a camera in there and I'm going to take pictures of the every couple of weeks and post it on the Facebook page, and yeah, the birds. We'll might have to put a net over it to shield it from the birds. But put pictures up there of the progress of the grapes. But yeah, the grapes are popping out. They're down here anyway. I mean, in northern areas, they're still getting snow and all that. So I doubt they are. If they did get bud break and. We're moving into May here, and some of the areas that we've talked to said they do get bud break in April. So, you know, the snow, that could be bad.
Well, I'm just wondering if maybe they're tending to their grapes at this time of year because, they have to do that rather than – because we had a pretty good run of guests there for a while. So, I don't know. Maybe they'll catch into it and say, oh, yeah, I need to be on the show. So we'll see what happens. This Sunday, I'll go ahead and get into the event you have, the wine class that you have this Sunday, which happens to be May the 5th, or as some people call it, Cinco de Mayo.
No se preocupen, Speedy González se los trae. Yepa, yepa, y arriba, arriba. Ándale, arriba.
Okay, maybe that wasn't it. One second.
Arriba, arriba.
Coming up this Sunday, May the 5th, 1 p.m. to 4 p.m., it is a very informative and entertaining wine class at Florida State's Winery. Join Florida State's Winery winemaker, vineyardist, cellar master, and tasting expert, Ron. Gosh, I've heard of him before. He shares his experience and educational knowledge of wine in a detailed wine class, 3 hours. It's a lot of fun, and it's a great way to learn. You learn something new every time about wine. He covers a brief history of wines, wine grape varietals, the wine grape diseases, glass styles and uses, cork history, evolution and uses, oak aging, wine tasting and rating the wines, the system, sampling of wines, and a discussion. It's located at Florida State's Winery at the tasting room, and it's a great, great, great informative class, and you definitely enjoy it. You want to contact the winery, we'll give you the information here. It's real simple, located at 25241 State Road 52 in Land O'Lakes, Florida.
And the phone number is 813-996-2113. That's 813-996-2113. Or you can email corp@flewn.com, C-O-R-P at F-L-E-W-N.com. That's as in Florida State's Winery. So, yeah, definitely cool to go there and check out the wine class and learn something great about wines, and it's very enjoyable. So that's this Sunday, 1 p.m. to 4 p.m., and the weather is looking good. Wow, it's going to be kind of cool. It's 55 for the low, 81 for the high. Wow, for Sunday. So, yeah, we have something coming in again, 55. That seems kind of that's outrageous. But
here it is.
That's up in the area. So, yeah, come on out to Florida State's Winery, and it's always a great time. So check it out, and we'll give you more of that information in our closing thing. So that's Cinco de Mayo.
Yes.
Cinco de Mayo.
Yes.
Okay. So check it out, and I guess that's the song I was trying to find.
That's the one? All right, good.
That's the one. Took me while I'm writing notes and checking out things. I sent you a link also to one of the websites. I you were talking about the history. Where was the world's first grape and all that?
Mm-hmm.
So I found a page, and it was from Pennsylvania, the university out there. It was from I have to check that out, but it seemed kind of interesting. I don't know if this person is guestable or not, but it was.
He had a
big article on it, and he's an author, and so if you check that out, I don't know, we'll see what happens. So we will be back. We'll go ahead and close the show, I guess, unless you have anything additional to add. Otherwise, we'll close the show. We'll see you all back here on Thursday, May the 9th at 7 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time. And right here on Blog Talk Radio. Thank you, everybody, for tuning in, and the bus people for – let me take a look and see if it's still – no, it's not raining. I don't think it is.
Good.
So, yeah, still good. Otherwise, they would be banging on the door and the windows and stuff, you know.
They wouldn't want to come in, and you'd have to, you know, slap them. And all.
Dry the feet off. But, we'll see you all. See you all next time. Thanks again. And
thank you all very much for listening.
Yeah. If you have any questions or comments, you can email the show allaboutwine101@gmail.com. If you'd like to be a guest, if you're in the industry, wine industry, a wine enthusiast, you have a blog, like we had really cool Joy Neighbors last week from Joy's Joy of Wines. Ron quotes the blog all the time.
Quotes her all the time.
You can contact us, and we'd love to have you as a guest. It's allaboutwine101@gmail.com. And we'll see you all next Thursday. Thanks again.
Thank you.
This concludes tonight's broadcast of All About Wine on Blog Talk Radio. A special thanks to our special guests who have appeared on the show, and thanks to you, our listeners, for tuning in and supporting All About Wine. Be sure to follow us on Twitter and like our Facebook page. Go to twitter.com or facebook.com/AllAboutWineBTR. We welcome your comments and questions by email at allaboutwine101@gmail.com. The email address again is allaboutwine101@gmail.com. All About Wine is a weekly program featuring Ron, Vice President and General Manager of Florida Estates Winery. The winery is located at 25241 State Road 52 in Land O'Lakes, Florida. From Interstate 75, take exit 285 and go west for approximately 4 miles. Or from US 19, the Suncoast Parkway, and US 41, go east on State Road 52. The winery is open daily, 11 a.m. to 6 p.m., for retail sales and wine tasting. Visit the gift shop and enjoy the peaceful setting outside under a large shady canopy of oak trees. Florida Estates Winery is pet friendly, and picnics are welcome. For more information, call area code 813-996-2113. That's area code 813-996-2113. Or visit us on the web at www.floridaestateswines.com. Again, that's floridaestateswines.com. Be sure to subscribe to our informative bi-weekly newsletter. Thanks again, and we'll see you next time on All About Wine on Blog Talk Radio.